California grape growers, both combined wine and table grapes, is unionized, and why isn't a higher percentage of the farm industry unionized, particularly before the Duke Magian administration came in and the reasons that you set forth about them allowing employers to get away with more strong-handed resistance techniques. But under Governor Brown's administration, why weren't the farm workers more successful than they were in getting a larger percentage of the farms unionized?
The figure of the table grape industry in mid-May, when the crop starts coming in, we estimate that less than 3% of the California grapes will be under union contract. On the wine grape, about 60%, I would say, is organized now. As to why we haven't organized faster, even under Governor Brown. Governor Brown was a good governor, but he wasn't magic. And what has happened is that we have, as an example, cases that were initiated by workers on the first day the law came into being in September of 75, which we're still dealing with through the appeals procedure. But more important than that, we have 36,000 farm workers representing almost 100,000 jobs whose cases are tied up either because the growers refuse to bargain collectively in good faith or because they're tied up in... No, those are because the growers won't bargain collectively in good faith. And we have God knows how many other workers, but probably close to 50,000 whose cases are still bottled up in the courts. So we put all those together, that's a very sizable portion of the workforce in California.
But where elections have been lost, do you attribute the losses to employer resistance that has gone unpunished? Or I mean, what are most of the main causes of why elections are lost where they are?
Well, a certain percentage of workers don't want the union, but not enough not to defeat an election. What happens basically is that an employer can commit an unfair labor practice and get away with it, which then sets the trend for other employers. For instance, in California today, it's suicide to have an election the way things are going with Governor Duke Magian, because what you're doing, you call out the people and they'll get fired. And God, we don't think they'll ever get their jobs back. But the two big things that the growers use to discourage workers or to intimidate workers, first they have the labor consultants, but basically fear. I mean, you know, if you vote for the union, we're going to fire you. Or if you vote for the union, we'll close the place down. It's tough to organize, but it can be done. If we have just a semblance of protection, I think we can do it.
Yeah, I understand that the last boycott was in order to gain the rights to organize for the farm workers. I don't understand really what the results of this boycott are that you see and what would mean success for the boycott.
It's true, the first boycott was because there was no collective bargaining rights for workers, and we had to do it through economic pressure. It worked very well. This time, we don't have a boycott and we don't have the law. And the reason we're calling the boycott again is to have economic power so that regardless of what happens with the law, we have the one basic tool, the one basic force that we've been able to use to organize workers. In fact, more progress has been made through the boycotts than any other way for the union. And as to why we're boycotting grapes is because grapes are, when you talk about a grape boycott, almost everybody knows it's easier. We hope that the pressure on the growers, the grape industry, in other words, a political problem we're trying to deal with economically, bring economic pressure on the growers and get that pressure to turn into political pressure on the governor to come down and let that law start working again.
I've always been troubled by the amount of time and energy that unions have ended up spending fighting each other. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit in that regard about what the status is of your relationship with the Teamsters and what's happened to the truce that you had several years ago.
Remember that when you say unions fighting one another, it's always unions fighting a union and an employer. in our case? Well, you know, to give you an example, with all the work we did by 1970, we had organized and signed for a 3-year contract period about 70,000 farm workers in California working grades. The industry was totally organized. There was no law then. It was done through the boycott. 3 years later, when those contracts expired on April 15th of 1973, next day at 8 o'clock in the morning while we're negotiating, the industry tells us, we've changed our minds and we've given the contracts to the Teamsters. And we weren't fighting the Teamsters, we were fighting the growers. And as it turned out, no one kept those workers, neither the Teamsters or us. But 18,000 of those workers, plus about 3% of the existing workforce, have contracts with the union or have selected the union through secret ballot elections and are waiting to get contracts. Let me just add something else for other unions. And I'm not an expert in industrial unions, but it seems to me that one has to really understand a couple of things. One of the reasons that, many reasons, but one very difficult problem for unions is that someone sometime back came up with the idea of units, subdividing a workforce into units. And the cost of that has wreaked more havoc with employers and unions than any other thing. The employers brought the idea of units to retard the progress of union organization. What they did, they brought in a lot of unions into a plant because of the unit system, and they bought a can of worms.
Mr. Chavez, it's incredibly good to hear somebody is enthusiastic in 1985. It's about time to hear somebody's optimistic about the future. But one problem I'm having is, as a student, it's very difficult. It's very easy for me to support a boycott of table grapes. I can't afford table grapes anyway. And I don't know if everyone here can, but I certainly can. None of my friends can. We would like to do something positive to help the UFW. And we're thinking if there are other things that the UFW is doing other than just the table grape boycott.
We're organizing. You can come and organize with us.
In California this summer?
We're organizing. We're organizing in Mexico. The people who come across, we run medical clinics. We have an extensive service center program. We have about 50 service centers throughout California and the Southwest. We have a lot of work that we do for the workers besides the straight union work. You could do that. But more important, you could help us boycott because you see, and what we also have a huge legal department because everything now that goes comes out of that board is appealed by us or by the growers. And let me also tell you this, that our attorneys have been to the Supreme Court in the last 10 years more than any other organization. And we won 92% of the cases. And we're proud of that. And we also have a Harvard-trained attorney working with us. I thought you'd like to know that. But the boycott needs, first of all, we're using a lot of direct mail. And we like to send letters to all of you and keep you informed of what we're doing. And the way to do that is by signing those cards that we gave you. We'll also send you a magazine to give you some real in-depth of what's happening with the union. But we also need campus groups to endorse the boycott, to pass formal resolutions endorsing us. We also need to borrow mailing lists. If you come across any lists that we can borrow, we'd like to have them.
There we go.
I just have a question. I know you said that your motivation to do all this work came largely from your personal experience, but I'm just wondering whether or where your tactics, your political tactics for the boycotts came from, if they were original or if there were certain leaders such as Martin Luther King or Gandhi who really inspired you and whether your tactics are similar to theirs.
Very little I do is original. The wheels have been invented. We just kind of polish it up, you know, and adjust it to our needs. The boycott is really directly an inspiration from Gandhi and Dr. King. And I should tell you that long before we started organizing farm workers. I worked for 15 years in community organizations. We were the first Chicano organization. Let me tell you how far we go. See how old I am. I got out of the Navy in 1946, and we fought our first school desegregation case in Riverside County in 1947 and won it. Then we went back the next year and fought a separate but equal case also in the county we won it. So we've been going since then until now, so we have a lot of, we've been around for a long time. And in that course of doing that work, I've studied, Gandhi and King and all of the good men that have been effective in rallying people and so forth. And the boycott, really the inspiration of the boycott came from Gandhi and also later from King, and it works. It works. We've done 27 boycotts. 27 successful boycotts. Many of them you don't know because once we announce them and a week later the company says we don't want the boycott and they sign, but we've had 27.
How is mechanization entering into the farming industry, and how are the growers using mechanization as a tool to threaten workers?
The big mechanization projects are almost over in agriculture in California. The real big one was 1955, 56, and 57, when the cotton was mechanized and 300,000 jobs were eliminated. And then in the early 60s, the canning tomato was mechanized, and about 120,000 to 150,000 workers were displaced. Then they mechanized all of the field crops like alfalfa and wheat and sugar beets and so forth. And then they've had some mechanization of wine grapes and also some of the nut crops. But I should tell you that as they mechanize more jobs, there are more workers working in California today than they were before the mechanization. Because see, what happens is that the mechanization has been almost entirely geared at the harvesting end of things. And so that as machines can harvest more wine grape, more acres can be planted, and there's more work then in the cultural practices of grapes, as an example. And so that there's a shift now. 20 years ago, 80% of the workforce was involved in the picking of the crops. In other words, very short duration jobs, very fast, piece rate work, moving from one crop to the other. And a lot of the workers were really involved in harvesting. That's different now. Over 50%, 60% of the workforce now is involved in agriculture and other than harvesting. So that the average seasonal hours of work in those years was maybe 200 hours a year. It's more like 800 and 1,000 hours today, particularly in our union. The jobs that we have under union contract tend to be longer duration than those not under union contract.
I'll give you one last chance, and please join me in thanking very much Peter Chavez.